My name is Alan Jeffrey. When I came to Somerset over 40 years ago, I got involved with the anti-nuclear campaigns as a member of the Ecology Party, the Green Party then, committed against pollution to the environment, and found out they were trying to build Hinkley C. And ever since I've been involved in with the local campaigners trying to stop the building of Hinkley C. And Mrs. Thatcher didn't build it. But Tony Blair started to revive it again with the French government, and they're still taking ages and ages and ages to build it.
Okay, so Alan, could you just explain, because there's quite a lot of Greens these days, including the Scottish Green Party officially, that are really actually supporting nuclear. They say that nuclear is actually very important as a Green to have in your energy mix, because it's not a fossil fuel. It's it's actually very good for climate change.
I don't know where you've got that idea, because the Green Party, it's the only English Green Party that is totally anti-nuclear.
Well, the Scottish Greens have committed to keeping their nuclear power stations going up there.
Well, Hunterston is going to be closing down pretty soon in the next 6 months or so. And Torness probably won't be a lot longer, but
this is the problem, is that we've got a thing called global warming, we've got climate change, and they're saying that nuclear has to be kept because it doesn't affect the climate, whereas a lot of the other, you know, the fossil fuel things do.
I'm sorry, but nuclear is very carbon intensive. Now, despite what the nuclear industry tries to make out, they are in a desperate situation to try and keep governments building nuclear power stations for their businesses, their engineering, and government, never-ending government costs. The point is, no method of generation of electricity is zero. The only time when nuclear becomes a sort of a non-carbon producing was in the fission in the actual reactor itself. But every other part of the nuclear cycle is highly carbon intensive. From the mining, the process, the mining, of course, thousands of tons of rock are mined to get a tiny amount of uranium out using, of course, lots of fossil fuels. Then they pollute lots of the indigenous populations as they process the rocks to get and make the fuel, the yellow cake. When it comes over here, there's more fossil fuels used in the processing to manufacture the fuel and to concentrate the fuel. Transport, of course, transporting across the world. And remember, if nuclear needs a constant supply of fuel, like uranium mining goes through the whole life of the reactor. Whereas if you think of wind power, once you've built the wind turbines, or solar, once you produce them, there is no carbon dioxide production once they've been built and made. The building of the nuclear power stations takes masses and masses of carbon, produces lots and lots of carbon dioxide. Hinkley Point, they've been boasting about the amount of largest amounts of concrete mixes. And it takes years and years to build it with concrete and steel, which does not help climate change. Because all those years it takes, and it takes decades to build a nuclear power station, they are burning fossil fuels, making the concrete, making the steel, and this takes for many, many years when you are not actually helping climate change. You're actually putting more and more carbon dioxide into the air. And what happens to the waste afterwards? When a power station comes to the end of its life, then you have masses more carbon dioxide produced as you dismantle the power stations, transport the fuel up to perhaps Sellafield, and then you've got thousands of years of looking after this high-level toxic radioactive waste. And nobody at the moment really knows what to do with that waste. We've had 60 years when all they've said is, oh, we know what to do. We'll just bury it under the ground, under this, just like Finland. Well, Finland has spent 20 years trying to do 26 kilometers of tunnels through igneous rocks, because it's got two reactors with fuel there. No other country in the world has got as far, far as that, but it's taken sort of 20 odd years to get that far. And they're only just giving them permission, to try and start to build the end of those tunnels now to put the radioactive waste. So you imagine all the carbon dioxide produced in the tunneling of that. And we don't even know where we're going to put all the radioactive waste that's built up over the last 60 years. And we don't know how much it's going to be, because we don't know how many nuclear power stations. It's going to be less now, because the commercial financial world is not interested now in nuclear power stations. And they're much more interested in the renewables, which are cheaper, quicker to produce, and don't produce the long-term radioactive waste, which our children are going to be left with to try and deal with the problems that we haven't solved ourselves, a technical and a huge financial black hole, which will have to come out of taxpayers. We used our taxpayers' money to build our nuclear power stations. We sold them off, some of the newer ones off cheaply to France. And now it's regretting, because in the next 3 years, six of those reactors they bought, they hope to sort of extend the lives by another 10 years. They're giving up on now. Six of the old British reactors won't be here in 3 years' time. They've actually started just this week. They've said that the Dungeness power stations, which have been offline for the last 2 years through technical problems and corrosion problems, they haven't produced any electricity for the last 2 years, along with Hunterston and Hinkley Point B, of course. All those reactors with their cracking problems have been offline for at least a year each, not producing any electricity, and certainly therefore not reducing the amount of coal being produced.
Yeah, anyway, so Hinkley C seems to have been beset by delays. The latest is, I believe, is to do with a fish repellent system.
Yes, the cooling system that they wanted to put in to build Hinkley C is direct cooling, where they take in vast amounts of water from the Bristol Channel and the Severn Estuary to condense the steam, which it's the steam generating reactors only produce heat.
And okay, so how much water do they take, and how far out in the sea?
Right, because of the very very high tides in the Severn Estuary, they have to go out for the. They need four times the amount of cooling water that, say, the B station used. So to get 132 cubic meters per second, they've had to go out to the deeper waters 3 kilometers out into the Bristol Channel, whereas the B station just had 100 yards out it used to collect its water from. So they're going out 3 kilometers. And, of course, with the high tides, the young fish, when the tides go out closer to where these intake tunnels are. And that vast amount of water sucks in like a giant plug hole continuously, and it's going to be sucking in the cooling water vast amounts over 60 years. And they reckon the conservationists reckon it's about 500,000 fish a day will be sucked into the power station. Most of them will not survive. And if you take that over the 60-year life, you're talking about 11 billion fish.
Well, couldn't they just have, say, a grill that the fish couldn't go through?
What happens is that there's four intake sections on the bed of the River Severn, 3 kilometres out. They drop down 30 kilometres and come down three kilometres back to the power station, where they hit a mesh. That mesh is a revolving cycle, so that the water goes through five millimetre spaces. So any eggs or larvae or anything smaller than 5 millimeters just goes straight in and is killed in the hot temperatures in the condensers. The others, once they've hit that mesh, they are very slowly carried up and they're supposed to be dropped off into another channel, which takes them another kilometer back out to sea. So a lot of these fish being dragged and sucked with the pressure changes, the physical damage as they're being forced along these sucked along these pipes, hitting the mesh and then being exposed to the air, most of them will die. I mean, even EDF admit that the herrings and sprats, 90% of them will die in the process, even though they say they've got a fish recovery system.
Well, I mean, surely they could be having a kind of a fish processing plant there as well. Maybe if there's some herring or whatever, that they could just process that and sell it.
Well, if you think back to what happened with the bee station, all this fish was each week they were taking away tons of dead fish, which they went to the local dump and dumped it all. So that was fish of all many types. There's 110 different species of fish that are, some are resident, some are and there's lots of important migratory fish that all go through the Bristol Channel up the Severn Estuary. Processing, these are future stocks of fish we're talking about here. The Severn Estuary is a breeding ground of young fish, and those young fish will grow into older fish as long as they can survive. But if they're killed when they're eggs, larvae, or as young, immature fish, then they won't be breeding in the future. So we're talking about killing off lots of future generations of fish. Normally, there's the ecological balance in the food chains, but this is an extra devastating problem because man is sucking out continuously the marine life out of the Severn Estuary and killing it, and then throwing the dead fish or the wounded fish, which become prey again very easily for other fish. So stocks of fish over 60 years, it will have a devastating effect, especially on some of those fish which are in very low numbers at the moment.
Well, I mean, anecdotally, Alan, I've spoken to fishermen on both sides, basically the Newport side and the Minehead side, and they say that the fish stocks are very depleted, and you will find very few people actually out there, fishermen and fisherwomen, if there are such things, that they were saying that this was, they were always very, very dissatisfied with the number of fish they're catching nowadays.
Well, this has been going on because you've had the A station and the B station, don't forget, for the last 30 years. And all the local traditional fishermen, like the sled fishermen, not far from Hinkley Point at Stalford, they've said how all their catches have gone down 90% ever since they've had the B station, the A and the B station there, sort of thing. And they've virtually gone out of business, the traditional fishermen of the areas. And as you say, fish stocks have been going down. John May, who's been a lifelong angler on the Bristol Channel, the Severn Estuary, he is very unhappy with the amounts of young, immature fish, which are just no longer about. Many years ago, there were masses of young, immature fish that bred in the Severn Estuary. But because of the nuclear power stations dragging out all this cooling water and these direct cooling systems, when there are alternatives around the world, in some places, direct cooling is banned in a lot of America, because of the damage to the fish stocks. The alternatives, of course, are cooling towers. So you can condense your water back again in the steam generation system with much less damaging ways all over the world. In America and over Europe, you quite often see the great big cooling towers. But for some reason, our government and EDF wanted to use direct cooling, by sucking in vast amounts of water from the Severn Estuary, and And the Environment Agency were very concerned about this, because in 2013, when they were trying to get their planning permission to build, they had to pass an environmental impact assessment. And the Environment Agency said, your cooling system is going to have a terrible effect on the fish stocks and the marine life in the Severn Estuary. You have to use some mitigation. And they agreed in 2013 to have an acoustic fish deterrent. What that basically means is a series of loudspeakers that will send out noise so that fish, 90% of the fish that can hear, will be put off with that noise, and they wouldn't go anywhere near where they're to be sucked in into the cooling system on the intake heads. And they agreed to that in 2013 to get their planning permission to start the building. 7 years later, EDF suddenly decide, oh, we can't afford to do it, and it's a health and safety risk. Now, this is very suspicious indeed. When they're to get their planning permission, they're trying to avoid what they were asked to do by the Environment Agency. And now what they're saying is, oh, we've got some scientists who say, oh, it won't be that. They've reduced the numbers of fish that they originally said was going to, were going to be killed, even with the AFD. And now they say, oh, well, without the AFD, it's not really going to make much difference. They don't seem to care about trying to protect the fish species entering and being gradually reduced over many years. It's certainly not a good sign for the biodiversity of the ecology of the marine life in the Severn Estuary.
No, well, it certainly isn't. I wonder, are there any other delays? Because this Hinkley Sea seems to be dragging on and on, Alan.
Right. So some of the delays obviously came, as they will, quite like for many businesses, because they had to change the way they worked with COVID, of course. In the last year or so, us locals kicked up a lot of fuss, because for a while they weren't changing their conditions on this huge building construction site, which uses thousands of workers that come from all over the country and house in the villages and the towns around. And lots of local people were saying, we've got to be locked in the, you know, like the elderly people in the villages say, but you've got all these people who come from all over the country, from different COVID hotspots and things, travelling down here, mixing and going in the shops and the towns and everywhere. And there was a lot of local concern about the fact that Hinkley Point C was a major contributor, perhaps, to the local to the COVID spread in the area. And because lots of fuss was made by the councils and Stop Hinkley, we kept on raising these measures, and to the ONR, the Office for Nuclear Regulation, and the Health and Safety Inspectorate, then they started to change their techniques and how they worked. And of course, it meant, of course, that they couldn't have lots of people closely working together. And so despite this, they still carried on working, but what they did is on the buses, they doubled the number of buses. They had masses of double-decker buses coming up from Cornwall, and they got extra Chinese buses as well, because the people going into work, of course, were all sitting beside each other originally, so they had to use 2 to 3 times the number of buses. So it cost them a lot more money. It took them a lot more time. And then there was lots of fusses about where they were living and how they were living in the hostels close together and the possibility of spreading the COVID. Eventually, they really had to build up a whole set of new rules, which meant that they slowed down drastically how quickly the work that they wanted to do could be done. Another interesting point that did come up, of course, was that over a year ago, one of the huge concrete silos that they used for mixing the continuous concrete when they were trying to do the foundations for the nuclear reactors, they had to do continuous concrete mixing, and they added in slag as part of the special, highly specialized nuclear concrete. And it was in a great big tall, one of the largest silos containing mixes to go in the concrete. And then one day it just collapsed. Half an hour before the workers were just going to go in there. Remember, it hit the national headlines? So that was another sort of hold up and slow down. Obviously, trying to sort of put men into the tunnels, building these intake tunnels, which go under the River Severn bed. People are going to be in close proximity and they had to be dressed in special. So both transport to work, where the masses of workers were going to live, the way they worked on site had to keep their special separate distances and be dressed in special ways. It all added to costs, as most businesses did during the lockdown periods. So the costs still keep on going up. And now they're saying that they need another 3,000 workers. Originally, all along, we've been told that there was just going to be 5,000 workers at the peak, which was supposed to be about the time about now, when they finished the civil work and they were starting to move on, as they are now, into the electrical work and the proper building of the actual stations themselves, which is a lot more. There'll be a lot more foreign people, people from other areas coming, because there's not, in Somerset itself has not got a high level of skilled workers. In fact, they're putting out messages all over the country for electricians, skilled electricians, to come down and work at Hinckley. They've got big problems of trying to get skilled workforce that they will need for the highly specialised work on nuclear power station building. So as you can see, there's all sorts of problems, as you say. Now, they're going through a public inquiry now about not using this acoustic fish deterrent. They're trying to go to the government to bypass the planning rules that were originally given to the power station. And it's 2 weeks. Our campaigners, along with various other animal rights people, just the other day, put on a little show with a huge banner outside the offices of the Planning Inspectorate, because they've just started. It's just going to be 2 weeks now where the Environment Agency and EDF are all arguing about how much damage will be done to the fish stocks and the marine life over the next 60 years. Are you still there?
I remember a couple of years ago, maybe 18 months or so, I was very concerned to hear that there was a possibility of what some people called radioactive mud being dumped on over in Wales from Hinckley. I wonder what's happened with that.
Right. That's still an ongoing process at the moment. Now, what the situation is, a couple of years ago, EDF wanted to start these cooling water intakes are 3 kilometres out in the middle of the 3 kilometres out into the Bristol Channel. And to put those intakes on the bed of the River Severn, they've got to scrape out all the silt layers on the bottom. Silt and dredge out thousands and thousands of tons of mud and then build some concrete foundations. They started to do that, but where was it going to go? The political implications became that mud, which may be contaminated with the radioactive particles from Hinckley Point, was all going to be taken and put and dropped just outside the front of Cardiff, on a stretch where they said it was supposed to dilute the sediment and spread it out as quick as possible. But the interesting point, but there was a lot of fuss from the people in Wales saying, why are you dumping what could be radioactive mud from the Hinckley area over here, just in front of us in Cardiff. And there was a lot of politics going on, whereby the Welsh were very upset that why should they dump all the Hinkley mud over? It's not only the Hinkley, it's not only the mud from the intake tunnels 3 kilometres out, it's the mud from around the new building of the new power station, building the jetty and the new piers and everything where the ships are going to come into, at the wharf at Cummidge and such like, areas which have been known to be areas which were contaminated in the past when the A station was there, when they were trying to get as much nuclear waste up to Sellafield as quickly as possible to be able to extract the plutonium out of it. But the conditions in those days were not very careful, and there was contamination around in the muds and things around the area, which over the years has sunk down deep. But when they go and dredge it up again, they're stirring up the old radioactivity into the and if they dump it on the beaches, not on the beaches, just in, 100 metres away, not 100 metres, a kilometre out from Cardiff Bay, it will go on the beaches. And when it dries out, any radioactive particles can just dry in the dust and be spread in the air and could be breathed in by people in the area. They started to do the dredging in 2019. Then all this fuss blew up, and then they stopped. They didn't do, because there were some legal problems of how and why they were doing the dredging, connected with the Environment Agency in Wales. It had just changed over to its own Environment Agency, but the people there didn't know properly all about how to test all the radioactivity in the mud and everything.
Well, I mean, I'm sure EDF would say there is no radioactivity in that mud.
Well, if they say that, they're completely lying, because they know they've been testing the muds and the silts. I can show, we can get the figures quite easily. They used to give me the figures of all there is radioactivity in all the soils and sediments around here. And that's why over the years, when they've had the Hinkley A and B stations, they've always had to monitor the sediments and the fish and all sorts of things to see what amounts of radioactivity. They've gone down drastically since the closing of the Hinkley A power station in the year 2000, of course, because now that's not putting more radioactivity into the sea and the sediments now. But those figures are there. There's also the figures, of course, of radioactivity everywhere from the fallout from the nuclear testing that was done. So if anybody says there's no radioactivity, that is not technically correct.
OK, Alan, well, Stop Hinkley doesn't stop. It goes on and on. How do people follow Stop Hinkley and follow your work?
Right. There's a Stop Hinkley website, which is stophinkley.org. And there's also a Stop Hinkley Facebook site. And there's also a Twitter site now as well. And we send out press releases. So if you go to the site, you should be able to get to some of the press releases and news all about our website has been going for the last 30 years.
Now, you obviously do get together. You said you got together earlier this week to do some sort of demonstration. How do people get involved in things like that?
We sometimes put out notices if we're going to do things sometimes on the Facebook site. If they want to contact us, as I say, go on the website, stophinkley.org, and contact us and say if you want to take part and become a Stop Hinkley member, and then we'll keep you informed with a newsletter. The newsletters used to be on paper. They still are for those people who need a paper sort of newsletter. Every couple of months we put out the newsletter, but the website itself keeps you constantly up to date with our press releases of what we're doing and all sorts of things. So finally,
do you think that the Hinkley Sea will ever be finished and up and running?
That is a very, very good question. EDF have huge financial problems. And even more so now that sort of Dungeness Power Station is not going to be running for another 10 years. The financial problems, and even though they want to build a Sizewell C, they are not prepared to put the money there. They only managed to get some money together for Hinkley C because a third of the money is actually coming from the Chinese government, because everybody else around the world dropped out. There was lots of interest shown in building this reactor a long time ago, from British Gas to America. Lots of countries around the world said, oh yes, we'll invest in your new modern sort of reactor. But then they saw what happened at Finland and in France, where they were trying to build these, and they're still 10 years late, and three or four times the cost of what they were originally supposed to be. They're still not finished. The only two reactors of this type that have been so-called finished are the two in China, and even they were five years late, which is amazing, even for China sort of thing. But and they're not, and none of these countries is going to build this type of reactor again anywhere.
Okay, well, look, Alan Jeffrey, fascinating. Thanks very much for joining us.
Okay,